Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Yo, yo, yo. Welcome back to the Millionaire Mindsets Podcast. I am your gracious host, Xavier Miller. And today we got a live episode. So before we get started, I would like to advise all the listeners, all the watchers, to please like, comment, share, leave that 5-star rating and review because we're trying to run those numbers up. And getting right to this episode, so today I got a very, very special guest. Y'all may have seen her online. If y'all ain't seen her online, y'all better pay attention because she's going crazy. And she's on the pod today. She's about to drop a lot of game, a lot of gems. And her name is Toddy. Welcome to the show, Toddy. What's up? What's up?
Thank you for having me.
Of course. I'm glad to have you here. You know, we've been planning on do this for a minute now. So you're here. So let's get straight to it. So for the listeners and the watchers, right? Well, this may be their first time seeing you or hearing of you. Give some brief background on yourself to let the listeners know who you are.
Yeah. So like he said, my name's Toddy. I'm a virtual wholesaler. I actually was just a waitress. And during the pandemic, when I got laid off, like a lot of people, I was looking for something else to do. And I just got on YouTube. I found out about real estate wholesaling and I tried to do that in Vegas. And from there, I failed. I completely failed for a couple weeks. I was calling people in Vegas. And then I found out about virtual wholesaling. So I started doing that in Ohio. I got 6 deals my first month, made 38K. It was like the most money I ever seen in my life. So kind of went super fast. And from there, I just kept doing the same thing every month. And it's been almost 3 years now.
Wow. So you said you started during the pandemic. So you said you was a waitress, right?
Yep.
So was Vegas, it shut down for a second, right?
It shut down for over a year.
I remember going out there and it was like boarded up.
Yeah.
So the restaurant, what restaurant did you work at?
I worked at La Pizza La Pasta in the Park MGM.
Okay.
So it was an Italian restaurant, but it was right on the strip. So we got all of the drunkest people that just came out the shows or was going gambling. So I was serving really drunk people, more wine, more liquor. And it was a fun job. It wasn't a bad job, but I was really stuck in it. Like, I was comfortable. I was probably making like $4,000 or $5,000 a month at the most. And
you were satisfied with it at the time?
I wasn't satisfied with it. I was trying to start all these businesses in the meantime. Like, I started drop shipping eyelashes. So I literally bought 5,000 pairs of magnetic eyelashes. And I ended up throwing out 4,700 something pairs because I only sold like less than 300. I tried to start selling food plates, Ethiopian food. I'm Ethiopian.
Okay.
Cleaning company, Ethiopian jewelry. There wasn't too much that I didn't try, but I was failing at that. Meanwhile, working this job that I was steady and comfortable at, but I always knew I wanted more. It wasn't like I was happy there,
right?
But I was making enough money to pay my bills and, you know, be a mom and be good.
So you always had the entrepreneurial like spirit, pretty much.
I always had it. Yeah. Okay. When I was really little in school, I used to like barter my clothes and my jewelry. Whenever I would go shopping, I'll go to Claire's and I'll get some hoops and I would, you know, sell them to my homegirls and stuff like that. So yeah, I always had that.
So when you left the job in Vegas, was it like they shut down or you just like left on your own?
No, I was laid off.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it was March 11th. I remember the day. And we came in and they were like, sorry, this COVID thing is bigger than we thought and we have to shut down the whole casino and you get $300 a week. And we'll see you guys when we see you.
$300 a week. What the hell are you supposed to do with that?
Yep.
That's crazy. So now you like, when was the light bulb for real estate? When did that go off?
Well, the funny thing is when I was 19, I got my real estate license.
Okay.
So when I was 19, I got my real estate license. I did nothing with it. I went to Century 21. I sat and I cold called for 6 months. But I wasn't doing it seriously. I was on Facebook. I wasn't taking it seriously. And I didn't get a deal. So then I took my real estate license and I started selling timeshares.
Okay.
So I sold timeshares for year and a half in Vegas.
Okay.
And I made good money, but then they shut down the department, what I was doing in the timeshares. And that's when I started just finding jobs. I worked at a call center. I worked at so many different places, and then I found the restaurant.
Wow. That's, so let's get it. Let's get, you said that first month when you got into real estate, you said you didn't make anything, right?
I didn't make anything. So when I got my real estate license when I was 19, I didn't make anything at all. 6 months, I cold called. I didn't make anything. It just, it was done. It was a fluke. So I figured, all right, this doesn't work. I'm too young. Maybe maybe people don't take me seriously. I had all these excuses I kind of made. And then I just went into the workforce. But when I got laid off, I remembered it was this guy that came and sat in my section at the restaurant. And he's actually from Dallas. I don't know if you know him, Lawrence Fuller.
That sounds super familiar.
Buys houses. He's an investor out here. But okay. He left a card up at the table that said real estate problem solver. I'm like, what's that? So I went to his Instagram and I saw he was a house flipper. I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. So right when the pandemic's happening, I DM'd him and I'm like, how did you get started flipping houses? He said, oh, I started off wholesaling. And I had heard about that a little bit in the past, but I never really knew exactly how to do it and everything. So I'm like, wholesaling. And that's what kind of lit the fire when I got laid off. I'm like, I want to do something. I've tried Amazon. I've tried all this online stuff. I've tried selling eyelashes and hair and jewelry. Nothing worked. Let me try this wholesaling thing. And I got into a YouTube wormhole. So it was March 11th. By April 7th, I had started calling people.
And what made you choose the virtual route, though? Because, you know, people first like responds when they like, I'm going to do wholesaling. They're going to like drive around in their local neighborhood. So what made you say, I'm going to do it virtually?
So I did that. So first Vegas and I got this app and I'm getting the houses. I'm calling people. I got a list. I'm calling people. But everybody was just cussing me out. And they were like, oh, I know what my house is worth. Are you crazy? Blah, blah, blah. And I just thought to myself, you know what? It's too hard in Vegas because the houses are very expensive. Airbnb is popping out here. At the time, it was like very, it was newer and there was no regulations.
Right.
So people were listing their house and it was selling the same week. I'm like, what is the need for a wholesaler, really? What's the need for, even if you have a distressed property, you could sell it super fast. So I didn't feel like there was a need for me. The market was oversaturated. So I was honestly on my way to giving up. I was honestly on my way to just feeling like this whole thing doesn't work. And then I was on YouTube and I saw somebody say something about virtual wholesaling. And I went to a Facebook group and I saw houses in Ohio for like $20,000. And I'm like, I think I could try this in Ohio. Let me just give it one more shot. So I did the same thing. I got a list in Ohio and I started calling it. And on the third day, somebody said, yes, I want to sell.
The third day?
I had spent 2 weeks in Vegas, nothing.
Nothing.
And I'm talking about 6-8 hours a day. It wasn't like I was just putting a little time in. I was really sitting on a dialer for 6-8 hours a day, every day.
And then you went to Ohio, third day, you got a deal.
I got a deal.
And how big was this deal, this
first deal? It turned out to be almost $15,000.
And it's your first deal?
First deal.
So at this time, you go from leaving your job to now you're a full-time entrepreneur, you getting into this wholesaling, you do Ohio, $15,000 first deal. What's going through your mind at this point?
When he said, yes, I want to sell, and then I gave him the number that I saw on the computer and everything, and then he said yes to that number, I was like, honestly, I was waiting for like the rug to get pulled out under me. For until the money was in my account visible,
you thought something would happen.
I thought something was going to happen. I didn't think that this was, I thought it was too good to be true. So I'm like, something's going to happen. There's something, you know, I don't even know what I'm doing. And I felt like, and then when the money came, I honestly felt like my hands, everything was vibrating. I felt like I was floating. I'm like, what is going on? I was on an adrenaline rush and it was real, but when he said yes, that just told me like, okay, keep going. So I ended up actually lining up like 5 more deals before that first one ever closed. I already had 5 more in the pipeline.
Already lined up.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So you was working into it. So, but how many at this point, like that first month, how many no's did you like on the estimate? How many did you get?
A lot. On an average day, I was getting between 20 to 25 people. So if you multiply that by like 20 days, that's at least like 300 something no's to the 6 yeses.
But that's a big lesson in that though.
Yeah.
Like I think most people they will definitely not get to that point. They get two or three no's, and it's like, this is not it. This is not for me. To get 300 different people telling you no to something, that takes a lot of discipline, a lot of foresight to just say, forget it. I'm gonna keep going no matter what. So what did you like? What like mentality did you have to keep doing that? Because it's easy to say, like you just said, you thought about giving up. Say, I'm just gonna get me another job. So what made like what really made you like keep going? Like, no, I'm gonna figure this out.
So number one, at that time, it was no other job. It was like, what am I gonna do? Really, am I gonna do DoorDash or something? Because it was COVID. It was no jobs. So it was either accept the $300 a week was as my life, but my rent was $1,700. So it wasn't even like, it didn't add up. I couldn't. I was going to just spend all my savings and be broke. So I knew I couldn't give up. But my thought was like, maybe I'm going to have to do something else, right? But after that first guy said yes, it told me like, all right, there's more yeses out there. So I wrote on a piece of paper, every no leads me closer to the next yes. And I put it on the wall. And I put another thing on the wall that said, nobody can outwork me. And I just figured, I don't know anything about real estate, but I can sit here for 8 hours a day. I went to my job for 8 hours a day. I can sit here for 8 hours a day. And I just went crazy. Like, I sat there and I had maybe like two bottles of water a day. I barely ate. And I just called people. I was in like a fury to not go broke, honestly.
And you, at this time, did you have one kid or two?
I had one kid. I had my son. And my mom just sold her house. Literally, right when COVID happened, she had just sold her house and she was going shopping for another house. And she has some health conditions, so we were all scared. And I told her, don't look for a house. Just come stay with me in the meantime until this thing is over, right? And she stayed with me so she would watch my son, because I have a little brother too. My little brother and my son are only 4 years apart. So my son and my brother are like brothers. So she came, my brother came, and she watched the kids all day, and I sat on the computer all day.
Yo, that's a lot on your plate. Hearing your story, that's a lot on your plate. Like losing a job. It's the middle of COVID. You gotta take care. You got a kid already. Now you got your mom depending on you and your little brother. That's a lot to. And so I want to ask you, like, how did that feel? Did it feel like the weight of the world was on your shoulders, or was it just like how did you feel in those moments?
Yeah, it did. It did. Honestly, the weight of the world has never left my shoulders. It still feels like that to this day. Like,
Even now.
I know that my entire family is depending on me to succeed. I've always known that. Like, my family comes from Africa, but it doesn't really matter. Like, even most people born here don't have generational wealth. You don't have nothing to fall back on. Most people born in this country, there's a few that do, but your parents' retirement depends on you for most of us.
That's facts.
So when they start getting older and they get sick and these real life happens. Oh, there's a hospital bill, or they need this type of therapy, or they need this or that. And you're seeing that happen in real life. Who's going to pay for that? And that's always, you know, my dad is much older than my mom. So it's always been something that was in the back of my head. And it's even when I was waitressing, or no matter what I ever did, it's always why I always hustled so hard. Cause I know, like, I'm the retirement plan.
Right.
I'm the retirement plan. And then now I have a little brother. So, It did feel like the weight of the world was on my shoulders, but for me, the pressure helped me. It became a fuel.
So you feel like pressure is a good thing.
Yeah, if you turn it into a good thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. So I was gonna ask you, so the first deal is 15 grand. So what was the next one?
The next one was like 7.
That's still something.
Yeah.
That's still much better than
Yeah. That was like 4 months of waitressing.
Yeah. So I want to go back for a second. I want to ask you this because I know it's a lot of people that's listening and watching this. You know, so many people, I'm pretty sure they come to you with this, people that know your story.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they ask you the same question. Like, people that stuck at a job that want to leave, because I get this question a million times. People are like, man, I really want to leave. I don't want to be here. I hate it. But it's that fear of like, what's going to happen when I leave? What do you say to people that ask that question?
I honestly don't even think people should leave their job. I think you should start doing what you're going to do next while you're at the job.
Okay.
Break it down. I honestly think that you should start doing what you're going to do next while you're working the job, because the job is your stability and your comfort. But you still have more hours in the day. That's not all the time you have. So whatever other hours you have, you need to be putting that towards your other thing. So let's say you work 8 hours a day at a bank, right? When you get off, you have that time after you get off to start working on something else.
Yeah.
When that second thing starts making money and now you're losing money because you're at the job, I think that's when you should quit the job.
I agree.
If you're at work and let's say you've been selling mics, let's say, for example, whatever, you've been selling microphones and equipment and people are trying to buy it and you don't have someone to sell it for you and you know you just lost $600 because you were at work, that's the time you should start parting from your job. But I'm not the person that's like, quit your job and just try entrepreneurship, because entrepreneurship is hard.
Very.
You might fail a couple times before you succeed.
Very.
And if you have, especially if you have kids, you can't just risk your whole family's life. It's easy for people to say once they've made money, but when you're in that situation and you have people to provide for, I highly don't suggest like risking everything and quitting your job and just trying something. You better know that thing works.
No, that's very, very true, because oftentimes the entrepreneur that's telling you to quit your job, the successful business that they have, they're not telling you how many unsuccessful businesses they had before that one popped off.
Exactly.
It's probably been like 5 to 10 very unsuccessful big failures they had before that business took off. So I completely agree with you. What do you say to people that say, like, for something to blow up, you have to be all into it? Because there's some people that at their job, their mindset is, oh, my business is never going to blow up because I got 8 hours here. I'm not 100% into my business. What's your thoughts on that?
I think that's a false belief.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a limiting belief. Like, if you, whatever you believe is reality. So if you think it's not going to blow up because you're at work, it's not going to blow up. But if you believe that, hey, this thing can start blowing up while I'm at this job and then I can leave this job and go full time, it will. A good example is I taught this girl, TK, in Jacksonville, Florida, this woman, virtual wholesaling. And she did, her first month was in July. And she
this
made,
July?
This July, just okay. passed. She made 23 grand.
That's big.
And then she texted me and she was talking about how she was going to quit her job. And she just got a promotion and she's a fashion designer and she likes what she's doing. So she's a stylist with a fashion designer. She likes her job. It's flexible enough for her to still do virtual wholesaling. And she just made 23K. And I was like, okay, why would you leave your job right now? You clearly can still make money while you're doing that, but that's going to give you the stability. Like, what if a month goes and you don't get a deal? And you already spent the money you made. Now you're going to be scrambling. You have a good job and you're making money. Stack the money until it's enough to quit.
Exactly. But you know, entrepreneurship has been so glamorized, and especially yeah. during the pandemic, early pandemic, it was like nobody was really working like that, and it was like entrepreneurship looked lit on the ground. But the conversation around it is not all the way authentic, because most entrepreneurs are not really breaking down to people how difficult this really is. You know what I'm saying? You can have some crazy months, and you can have low months.
Yep.
And sometimes you can have droughts that last an extended period of time. And everybody's not built for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you're not built for it, the first thing you're going to do when that happens, you're probably going to run right back to your job, quit your business.
Anyway.
Yeah. So it's like, you have to, I have this conversation all the time. At the end of the day, entrepreneurship is not for everybody. Investing is for everybody, though. But entrepreneurship is definitely not for everybody. And you got to figure out if you're going to do this, like, is you really built for this?
100%.
Because it's a lot of downs.
And that's, virtual wholesaling is not investing. It's entrepreneurship.
It's entrepreneurship.
It's entrepreneurship.
Exactly.
It's you can leave your job for it, but it's still another job. You still got to work it. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Until, so I think, like you said, it's glamorized, but also most of the people that is glamorizing it, the point of glamorizing it is always going to be to sell something.
To sell something.
Yeah. It's not being true and being honest with people and telling them about the hard parts. The hard parts is what you need to know first. Because before you start this, you need to know what you're in for, or else the comfort and the security of a job, a good paying job, might be for you. And that's not a bad thing.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that.
But break, you talked about virtual wholesaling. Break that down, because I was talking about you to someone saying, like, I got a virtual wholesaler coming on the show. First question they asked was, what's that? So I'm like, I'm laughing because I just assume people know like the same thing as I know. So I'm like, that's a good question. I'm going to have to ask her that. So break that down for the listeners and watchers. There's like a virtual wholesaler. What is that?
Yeah. So, well, regular wholesaling is just being the connection between a seller and a buyer, whether it's house, land, whatever. You want to sell a house or a piece of land or whatever it is. You don't want to list it for whatever reason, So somebody like me will come around and find a buyer, and I'm going to connect you guys, and I'm going to make the middle money. So if you want to sell it for $20,000 and she will buy it for $30,000, that means I can make $10,000 wholesaling that property.
Right.
So usually a wholesaler will do it where they live. Like you said, they'll drive around, they'll find messed up houses, they'll make a list, and they'll call people or text people, whatever. Virtual is just when you're doing it in a place that you don't live. So you never actually meet the sellers in person. You don't actually look at the houses. You don't do any of that. It's all done on a laptop and a cell phone. That's it. So I love it because I like to travel and move around. Like, I'm still going to be able to work while I'm here in Dallas or when I'm in Atlanta or when I'm on vacation. I'm going to always be able to work. It's not like I have to find someone to go take appointments or whatever if I was doing that.
What's the most difficult part about virtual wholesaling?
I would say the most difficult part is when doing virtual wholesaling is easy. The most difficult part is building a team around it.
And why is that?
Because remote work is extremely difficult. To sit in a room by yourself and be accountable is very hard. So when you have one guy in Florida and one guy in Texas and they're in a bedroom by themselves doing these sales calls, they can get demotivated kind of quickly.
Yeah.
And or they don't have the it's a new word I learned, but they call it assiduity, and it's the ability to sit on your ass for a long period of time.
Assiduity. I never heard of that one.
And they don't have the assiduity
to
do the job. And like I said, it's like when I started out, it was 6 hours, 8 hours on the computer. That's what it's sales. It's marketing and sales.
You're the perfect guest because you just segued me right into my next question. So did you feel like when you started wholesaling, you was a waitress? So did you feel like you had some kind of sales skills already or no?
Yeah, from timeshare sales.
You already had sales skills.
Yeah, so when I sold timeshares, it was very much a sales floor. Like, we had sales meetings, we got yelled at, we learned everything.
So do you think that, how important do you think that skill is?
It's important.
Very important, huh?
It's important.
Is it one of the most important skills to have as an entrepreneur, you think?
It's definitely 100%. Yeah.
So do you think, give us some tips for the people that's watching, because it's funny, I was just having this conversation with my family like 2 days ago, talking about sales and like how some people are naturally gifted at it and some people are taught it. Do you feel like people can be taught to be a great salesman, or just something that's just like naturally in people?
Oh, yeah. Someone can practice enough to get good. You know, I've seen people role play and they sucked in the beginning, and 6 weeks later, they're amazing. But it's the repetition. It's the learning, but it's not just the learning. It's taking action and doing the things repeatedly, because sales technically is psychology. A lot of people are good at sales just because they're naturally likable.
Right.
That's it. They're just naturally likable. They can carry a conversation. They care about you. That's what makes them good at sales. So if I'm talking to you and I'm like, Xavier, how was your trip? You know, how's your child? How's your wife? And I'm talking about you, naturally as a person, you're going to like me because I care about you.
Right.
That's it. That's all it really is. All the other stuff, like, you know, all that mind mentality, mind effing people and stuff, it's not, you don't have to do all that. It's just being genuine, caring more about the person than your objective, and letting the conversation flow naturally to how you can help them. That's it. That's what sales really is.
So basically good sales is caring about what this person wants, or
genuinely.
I'm glad you said the genuinely part, because that's probably hard for people to, some people just so disingenuous, they probably can't get that part down and actually like truly care about somebody or what their needs is. Because it's about having the even exchange, not being one-sided.
100%.
Sales, yeah.
You know, the first call, that first guy that said, yes, I want to sell, our conversation got so good to the point where I kind of forgot the point of the conversation. His father-in-law had just passed away in Cleveland. My stepmother had just passed away. And, you know, it was COVID. So, and they both didn't pass away because of COVID, but they both passed away kind of alone in the hospital. And we started talking about that, and he started crying, and it made me start crying. And the reason why he wanted to sell was because that rental property that him and his wife owned, the only reason they had that was because his father-in-law lived in Cleveland. So at this point, he's like, I don't even want it anymore. I lost the whole meaning behind that property. And if we would have never just got to talking, I would have never knew the real reason why he wanted to get rid of it. It hurt him to own that. It was a pain point. Every time he had a call that 10 didn't pay rent or there's a leak, it just reminded him about the loss he had. Mm-hmm. He just wanted to be clear of it.
And wiped out.
And that would have never happened if I wasn't... When he mentioned his father... Imagine when he mentioned his father-in-law. I was like, oh, sorry to hear about that. How many bedrooms?
He would have been like, man, get off my damn phone.
But because I'm genuine and I care, I'm like, what happened? Like, is your wife okay? You know what I mean? Because that's just the kind of person I am. I'm not going to hear that someone passed away and not just
continue the conversation.
And, continue to be like, let me try to get this deal. Mm. You know, and honestly, that taught me a lot. Because when I had that, I'm like, all I have to really do is really care.
Right.
And get to the bottom of how I can help. And guess what? If I can't help, I point them in a better direction. Mm.
That's game. That's game right there. Because sales is, for people that want to be entrepreneurs in business, sales is everything. Like, if you don't know how to close and actually get them, because you're in business to make money. Sales is you going to get the money. If you don't know how to do that part, your business is not going to succeed.
I always say the sales and the close is two different things.
Break it down.
Because you can be, like, imagine we build rapport and we have a really good conversation and you like me and everything and everything's all good, but I don't ask for the money. The close is, that's where you do, when I learned sales, they always said luck favors the bold. Whoever can ask for the, whatever it is, ask for the credit card, ask for the sale, ask for the signature, whatever it is, whoever can do that the most, inevitably is going to make the most money.
No, it's definitely a fact that life does favor the risk taker. Some of the most successful people I know, the people I know with the most money, they're not the brightest. They're not the smartest. They don't know the most. It's just that, generally speaking, the most times they're the boldest.
Yep.
They are very bold.
You got to be bold.
So brazen, you'd be like, shit. Like, dude got balls of steel. Like, yep. I wouldn't even think of asking something like that. Like, they're super, super bold, and they don't care how many times somebody tell them no or how many times, like, it don't succeed. They just continue on with their boldness.
And that's asking for the clothes. You got to ask for the money.
You got to ask for
the money. You can be a great salesperson, but if you can't ask for the money, then you're not going to make any.
Mm, that's a fact. Let me ask you this. As far as wholesaling, what's been your biggest deal to date?
$140,000. So it was a 4-property portfolio in Georgia.
Okay.
Four houses right next to each other. And the total purchase price that the buyer paid for all four houses was $720,000. So he got four houses, $720,000. They're each going to make him almost $2,000 a month. So he's making $8,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
It's better than the 1% rule.
Mm-hmm.
And we made $140,000.
Ooh, how did that feel doing that deal?
And it's funny because this was already like over a year and a half into it. I still thought something was going to go wrong. I'm like, no way am I going to really do this deal.
Because that's higher than most people's salary. That's in one deal.
It was crazy. And I cried.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I cried. I'm a happy crier.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
I cried that day. I cried. I was like, I can't believe this is real. And I have a team, so I had to obviously send people money.
Right.
So then I called everybody and I was like, y'all are never going to see me again. I'm off to the Bahamas. And I was just messing with them. But,
okay.
But of course, yeah, no. But I paid everyone. Everyone was very happy.
No, that's a beautiful thing. Congrats on that. That's big. That's very big. What do you think is the most challenging thing about being an entrepreneur?
That's a good question. So for me, it's just making sure that I never feel like this is good enough.
What you mean by that?
So there can be times where you're making good money and stuff like that, and you get comfortable, and you're like, this is good enough. Like, I'm making money. I know I have more money coming next month. I know I have more money coming. I can just keep doing this. That's scary for me. When I start getting comfortable and I don't have that push to do more, that's too close to going back to where I was at, you know? In life and in science, there's no, you're either going forward or you're going backward.
Yep.
There's no middle staying ground. The same.
Right.
There's no staying the same. For your body to maintain like homeostasis or staying the same, your body is working constantly because otherwise it's going to be declining. Yeah. So just like if you're not working out, eating healthy, that means you're going down. There's no staying the same. There's not really a maintain. So I think for me, the scariest part about entrepreneurship is there is nothing really pushing you. You have to push yourself to want more. And every day you have to want more. Because 2 years ago, I never imagined that life would be like this. So it could be easy for me to get here now and just be like, okay, this is cool. I'm making multiple six figures. Mm-hmm. I'm happy. Like, what is there to push me to want to make $1 million a year? What's there right. to push me to make $3 million a year? Nothing.
So how do you do it?
I have to push myself every day. And I have to expose myself to people who have so much more and who are doing so much more so that I can always remember, like,
there's more.
There's so much more. Even if what I'm doing might be a lot from where I came from, there's people that what I'm doing is absolutely nothing. So I continue to put myself in those environments so that I can want that.
Yo, you just gave a bar. For the people that's listening or watching, like, I hope they peep that game, because that's really it right there. Because it's hard to stay motivated. It's hard to always be like, especially once you start getting some success, you start living life, you taking vacations, doing your thing. It's yep. hard to, like, like, it's a saying, they say it's hard to be motivated when you're waking up in silk sheets and silk robes and stuff. And that's real. Once you're looking out there, you're feeling good, you're living good, it's hard to keep that.
You're literally comfortable.
Literally.
The bed is comfortable.
Everything.
The AC's good. The car works good. You don't have any pressure forcing you to make money no more.
No.
You're like, shoot, I could sit down for a year and be straight. But you can't. You cannot.
Okay. And I was talking to somebody, because I don't know if it's the same for men and women, but I know as a man, like, when I wake up, you know, women, like, in the home, like comfortability, mm-hmm. like the coziness.
Yep.
But I know me as a man, yes. when I wake up in all that coziness, I'm like, it's taking off that edge I need. I'd be like, man, I need to fucking sleep on the floor or something for 2 days or something to get, like, this edge back, because it's real. Like, it's like that. I always need to feel like I'm on edge. When I wake up, my fucking bed is plush. Seats is soft. I'm looking at, like, everything is just so good. It's like, man, I got to remember, like, no, I can do more. But the thing you said, like, being in around certain people in certain environments, that's so crucial, because that part right there, I think that's really the key. As somebody that's an entrepreneur that may be experiencing some wins, you have to stay around people that's, like, maybe doing better than you.
100%.
Because it's going to be things and conversations that they say, and you're going to be like, damn, I can do a lot more than I'm doing right mm-hmm. now. Like, I was just in Chicago, and I was talking to the head of sales for BET, and he said like some fly shit, and I was just like, damn, like I could, man, hold on, I got to do more. Like, but he didn't even notice. It was just like regular conversation, but I was like, hold on, I can do more. So that part is very, very important as far as, like, staying around people that's going to help you stay motivated and hungry,
yeah.
because being motivated as an entrepreneur, that's not. It's easy to be motivated when you don't got nothing.
It is.
When you start, like you said, you getting $100,000 checks and all that, you can kind of just kick your feet up and be like, man, I won that life. This is it right here. So I like that you said that. So let me ask you this. Have you took any losses as a virtual wholesaler?
So wholesaling is really cool because you can't really take a loss.
Right.
You know, like, you might lose a deal, but whatever it costs you to get that deal as far as marketing, you're going to make it back in the other deals. So with wholesaling, no. With buying properties, yes. So when I wholesaled for about a year and a half, I bought a bunch of properties because, like, everyone kept telling me, you can't just wholesale everything. You need to keep some. For every four you wholesale, keep one. I just kept hearing all this stuff, and I'm like, man, I'm giving away my generational wealth. Like, I had all this stuff in my head about, okay, I need to start buying these properties. So I bought a bunch of properties. I bought duplexes and triplexes, and it was to the point where I had, all in Cleveland. So I was still wholesaling Cleveland. I'm buying them in Cleveland. So I had 18 doors, right?
Okay, that's dope.
At
Congrats.
One time in 2021. It wasn't good, thank you, but it was not good.
Why is
so
that?
When the whole thing started, like, you know, you're inheriting, when you buy a distressed property, you're inheriting the problems.
Yep.
So even though there's tenants in them, there's still stuff that can go wrong, right? So,
and it will go wrong.
It will go wrong. Let's say an AC goes out. Yep. AC went out. It was like $6,000-something. Okay. All right. It's cool. I'm making money on the first every month. I'm going to get that back in a few months. All right. And then it rains really hard and someone's roof is leaking. Okay. Now we got to figure out what's going on roof. Okay. We need a new roof. Now I have a couple properties that I'm supposed to renovate, and things, my wholesaling business, first of all, inevitably slowed to a stop because now I'm focusing on these houses that I own now all day, taking calls, trying to fix this and that. Upstairs, downstairs, people are fighting now. One of them is suing the other one. They literally got in a fist fight. All this is going on, and now my wholesale income is slowing down. And this is 2021. And then probably between May to November 2021, I'm going through all of this, owning these houses. And in November, I was just so stressed out. And my dad saw me having like a panic attack. And he was like, why don't you just go back to waitressing? It seems like real estate is stressing you out too much. And then I realized, I'm like, I was never stressed when I was just wholesaling. It's because I jumped into this ownership thing without having a full knowledge of how much repairs really cost. I'm spending all the money I just made wholesaling fixing these properties.
Yeah.
And then the rental income is not that much at the end of the day.
Not compared to them checks.
Not compared to that, you know, because it's Cleveland's. One is $650. You got $550. You got $725.
I know.
So at the end of the day, all this money I'm making on these mailbox money is not looking so good no more. So I still have two, but I ended up selling everything.
Selling them.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I made profit on most of them. I lost $7,500 on one. I lost like $3,000 on the other one. But at the end of the day, total, I came out with a little bit of profit, months of headache in between, and a lot of lessons learned. A lot of lessons learned.
That's big, because a lot of people don't speak on the real, true story and horrors that can come with owning real estate. People make it seem like it's all good, but it's problems. And you have to be, I was just having this conversation with somebody else. When you buy a house, you have to be mentally ready. Everything that's on, like, beyond financially, you have to be mentally ready, because there will be problems.
Yep.
You got tenants, we all come with problems. So when you get a home, it's going to be a ton of problems. And if you're not ready for that, you're going to be like, man, I know plenty of people, they heard about getting in real estate and ownership, and they did it. And they was like, man, I hated it. It was more problems than anything. And they like, the money wasn't worth it. So you, at the end of the day, you do have to buy right more than anything. Yep. It's people out here that just be like, buy real estate. When the reality is, you have to buy the right piece of real estate. Because if you don't buy the right piece of real estate, you're going to think real estate is a problem. And in some cases, in a lot of cases, it can be. But when you get the right deal, which might take time, it's a lot of due diligence, but it's worth it in the end. Because I didn't have horror stories and crazy tenants. I had tenants digging up holes in the backyard to bury their dog, all kinds of stuff. Like, all kinds of crazy.
You don't even own this house. Yeah, exactly. Why do you want your dog back here? That's crazy.
Exactly. Like, so it's stuff that really comes with this. But I want to ask you, like, as a mom too, as a boss handling business, what's, like, because I think this can be, like, beneficial to a lot of women that want to go down this path, that's already going down that path. Like, what's the... what's it like balancing that? Because I know that can be a lot on your plate. So for the people that's listening and watching that need some game or some advice on that, what would you say?
Balance is a funny word.
It is.
Because it implies that you're giving, you know, equal to all the things that are on your plate. And that's impossible.
Facts.
Especially when you are the provider for your family, obviously the provision has to come first, right? So I spend all my time with my kids versus when I was working, I was gone 10, 12 hours a day. I didn't get to see my kids anyway. Now I can see them all day, but I might be working while they're playing over there or whatever. It's definitely more of harmony than balance. Like, they're happy, I'm happy, we're all happy. But so my daughter's two. She doesn't really know what's going on anyway, so she just plays and has fun all day.
Yep.
My son really gets it. So it's funny, but he actually just got on his iPad, Google Earth, and this website to look up houses, because he's making a list. Because he wants to start making money. He was like, if I can find houses and you can do a deal, can I make money? And I was like, yeah. He's like, so I could do virtual driving for $1? And I said, yeah, of course you can. So last week... he got it on his iPad, and he has the notes on his iPad, and he's got like 8 houses in Jacksonville already. So it's definitely like, although I'm not able to be like stay-at-home mom vibes where I'm like just catering to them all day, like, yeah, I work a lot. I'm not going to act like I don't. There's a lot of times that I'm on the computer and I do feel guilty. I do feel bad. But at least they're right there. They're not at somebody else's house, and I'm not working on the strip while I got to go pick them up. Like, they're right there. If anything happens, I'm here for them. So that's why I love my business model, because it allows me to be present, even if I can't always be mentally present. But me being the type of person I am, like, I have to make time to just play with my kids and do nothing else. So I'll take them to the park, or I'll take an hour out of the day to just watch a movie with them. But other than that, I am always on the computer or reading a book. And they read and they do their thing too. So we kind of all live our own separate lives in the house. But that's how we have found our harmony. In the beginning, I felt really guilty that I wasn't always making like gourmet meals and the house isn't always perfectly clean. Right. Like you said, we like our comfort. I want a candle lit and the pillows all fluffed. But at the end of the day, like, that's not going to serve them. This is serving them. This is building something for them. And then now, look, my son is inspired. Who knows what he's going to do now? So I think that moms need to take the pressure off themselves, especially if you're the one taking care of your kids. Take the pressure off yourself to be everything perfect and prioritize what's the most important. Okay, they're eating healthy, they're exercising, they're playing, they're drinking enough water, and they're happy. And my business is thriving as much as it can so I can provide for them. That's my two main focuses. And other than that, like, I don't have a social life. I gave up social life to be a good mom and to be a boss.
Mm. So when you say you don't have a social life, that can mean a lot of things to different people. What do you mean by that?
I don't go nowhere. Period. At all.
I'm
in the house. If my kids are at school and at daycare, I'm in the office. And that's it. If I go out, it's with them for them to have fun.
Right.
I don't have brunch. I don't have date night. I don't go drink. I don't hang out with my friends. My homegirls call me. I talk to them for like 20 minutes. And that's it. And I tell them I got it. I had to sacrifice something.
With doing that, at times, do you feel like you're missing out on anything?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
I appreciate the transparency.
I do. I missed out on some girls' trips, and I missed out on some birthday parties. And I have an understanding group of friends who support me and love me and root for me, and they know my mission. So they're not the type of friends, like, you never go out with us, so we're going to stop being your friend. They're like, oh, you're lame. Okay, that's more how it is. Right. But I do kind of feel like I'm missing out on my 20s, you know?
Because
I've been doing this since I was 26. I'm 29 now, 3 years. I kind of do feel like I gave up some of my youth for this, but I don't regret it. I feel like it was a fair trade.
That's so interesting to me. That's really interesting. But at the end of the day, I will say this. I'm an outsider, of course. I think it's definitely going to be worth it in the end.
It's paying off. Yeah. And I'm not, you know, wouldn't it be worse if I was, like, sacrificing my time with my kids to go out and feeling like I was a bad mom?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I'm a great mom. I feel like I have a great business.
Yeah, they're like, you. those are, like, the dopest things.
It's the most important things.
Yeah. And then you can still, whatever those things are, when it comes to going out, traveling, brunch, kicking it, you're still young. You can still, they're still on the table.
Even
if you decide to do it at 35, you'll still be young.
Yeah, and I take a vacation, like, at least once a year. I do take, like, 4 days, you know, just away by myself or with a friend or whatever. Like, that I will do just to give myself a mental break.
Right.
So that still makes me feel like I'm not super missing out. I was never the party type of person anyway, so I don't feel like I'm missing out on the partying, but it's picking and choosing, because if you know someone invited you out on Saturday night,
right,
or Sunday night, and you know what's going to be the next day, okay, I have a 2-year-old that wakes up at 6:30 in the morning. I'm going to be tired. That's going to lead into the next day. That's going to mess up my whole week. I'm not going to have the mojo to do what I do.
No, you're not.
So I can't.
You're right. Like, I'm a new parent still. I realize once you have kids, it's only so many hours you got in a day. And when you got a business, then you got kids. You're gonna have to make lifestyle changes with something. Certain things gonna have to get dropped off.
100%.
Because it's not gonna be the kids that get dropped off.
And imagine now when your baby starts wanting to spend time with you.
Exactly.
Right now she's so little, she don't know, but soon she's gonna be like, "Daddy, take me to the park. Can we go to the aquarium? Can we go to the zoo?" And that's gonna be, you're gonna look at your friends and be like, "Man, why would I hang out with you? I got this."
Exactly.
Not like that, but
no, it's gonna be like that. Like, I got my daughter. We about to kick it. So
right.
Yeah. No, that's like I said, I definitely appreciate that transparency, because that's real. Like, a lot of people probably struggle with that, you know, picking especially in our generation. I feel like you 29, I'm 30. We got a generation where we kind of pick our like our wants over our priorities a lot of times.
Definitely.
You know, and then it, without realizing, it just bites you in the end.
Definitely.
Because all the stuff you need to handle is still going to be there when you're done having fun. You know what I'm saying? Those bills still going to be there. That debt you have is still going to be there. The business that didn't pop off is still going to be
bad on credit the ground. You've been ignoring.
Ignoring. It's everything is still going to be, when you're done having fun, it's all going to be there. So it's like, why not prioritize handling business so you could like have fun later?
Yeah, like you said, if I'm 35, look, if I'm 35, I got 20, 30 million, you know what I mean? In the bank. I have investments, cash flowing. I got things, income flowing. My mom has an issue. Here, mom, I paid off your house. At that level, yeah, of course I'm going to go to the brunch and I'm going to hang out. I'm going to go on the yacht and I'm going to take the time. But, like, right now, I can't sacrifice my future for a night out.
You can't. I know my boy Donovan Ruffin, he said, he told me something. He said, I never met a millionaire that told me I wish I would have went to the club more.
That's good. I like that. I never heard that.
But I'm like, you're right. And I'm like, but I know a lot of people that did go to the club that was like, man, I wish I would have handled business more.
I love that.
Yeah. So
that made me feel better about it.
No, you definitely, in my opinion, like I said, I'm an outsider, but in my opinion, I think you're definitely doing the right thing. But I want to, when it comes to like virtual wholesaling for a second, so if somebody want to start, right? They listening, they hear your story, they like, man, this is something I think I want to do. Like, where can they start, like, virtually? What sites or, like, how do they get started on the ground level? Let's say they know nothing about this.
Yes. So what I did and what anyone can do, because really, if you have the drive, you can just do it. You can get the softwares. You can put it together yourself. You don't need much. You need three things. So the first thing you need is a list of motivated sellers.
How do you get that?
So you can go to the website I use, reprolist.com. If you go to reprolist.com, there's a 7-day free trial, but after that, it's like $100 a month. You can get 10,000 addresses with the name, last name, mailing address, everything of that person, right? So first you think to yourself, do I want to do this where I live or do I want to do it virtually? Even if you do it where you live, like say you live in Dallas and you want to do it in Dallas, you can still set up everything virtually to where you don't have to actually meet the seller and do any of that. You don't actually have to go to an appointment. So first you get the 10,000 list. You can skip trace that, which is getting the phone numbers for those people. So it's about $300 for 10,000. And then now you have a list of 10,000 people, right? You put that list of 10,000 people, name, phone numbers, everything into something called a dialer system. So, you know, when you work in a call center or whatever, you put the headset on and it just starts calling people back and forth. You don't have to touch anything. That's what a dialer system is. So the one that I used when I started is called Phone Burner. And it just calls one person at a time. There's another one called Ready Mode that I like too, and it calls three people at a time. That way you're increasing your chances. But if you're just starting, I like the one that it just calls one person at a time. So you put all those people into a dialer and then you just start calling and you literally just say, hey, Barbara, it's Xavier. How you doing? I see you own 123 Main Street. Are you interested in selling that? She says yes or no. If she says yes, you talk, build a relationship, and you try to get it under contract. So the first website I mentioned where you can get the list, reprolist.com. On that website, you can also put an address in and see what other similar houses sold for. So all you have to do really is offer less than a cash buyer would pay for it, right? Then you sell it to a cash buyer for what they would pay for it. So let's say Barbara said, you know what, I actually do want to sell. I want $140,000. Then you can go and see what did houses sell for. Okay, I see one sold cash for $120. And you could just tell her, I don't think I could do $130. I could do $105. Obviously, it's negotiation there.
Right.
But let's say she says yes to $105 or $110. Now you can go to that same buyer that bought one for $120 and sell them that one for $120. Yeah. And now you just made $15,000 or $10,000, and that's exactly what I did. Exactly what I did. Three steps.
Simple. Them simple steps, too, that simple. Anybody can do.
Anybody can do. You can literally write down what I just said and then go look it up on YouTube, and it's 35 billion people that talked about it. And that's literally it. Like, that's it. It's that simple.
How you feel about text?
So texting, there's some new laws that just came out. So you have to be registered or you can only text with an 800 number. I think texting is good, but I think it's played out already. Like, I get texts on properties that I sold 10 months ago. You know what I mean? So I think people get texts all day and night, and you got to be really like kind of desperate to want to answer texts. I won't say it doesn't work. I'll say some stuff works in some markets. Everything works if you do it in mass. If you're texting 10,000 people a day, obviously it's going to work. Somebody's going to. It's power in numbers. I don't think texting is the best way, though. I think someone hearing your voice and you being able to build the actual rapport with somebody, like, voice is the most powerful thing besides seeing someone in person.
How often are you still getting, like, cussed out to this day?
So right now I have a team, so they get cussed out. but like last month I said, you know what, let's do some motivation stuff. I got back on the phones with everybody and I got two deals. And in that week that I was just on the phones, I did get cussed out and it still sucks.
So it still sucks?
Still sucks. It doesn't feel good. I'm sensitive.
How does so somebody that's watching this, right, they think about doing this. How does a phone call go? I want to, like, create a scenario. Like, when you, obviously, you tidy. Let's create a scenario where, like, I'm somebody that you're trying to reach out to that's trying to sell a house or whatever.
Sure.
You want to do that?
Yeah.
Let's do it. So you call me, ring, 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 hello, I answer the phone.
Hey, Xavier.
Speaking.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Who is this?
This is Toddy. I was calling about your house on Belvedere Street. Do you still own that property?
I do.
Okay, are you interested in selling that?
I've been thinking about it. I'm really not sure.
You're not sure?
Mm-mm.
What do you mean?
I'm not sure if I want to sell it. I want to keep it. I'm not really in a rush to sell it. But with the right offer, I'll think about it.
Okay, do you live there or is it like a rental or something?
No, it's been vacant for a while. This has been in my family line. I got it passed down to me, so I just still have it.
Okay. And how long is a while? How long has it been vacant?
It's been like 2 years.
2 years?
Mm-hmm.
Are you paying a mortgage on it?
No, but I'm paying taxes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And was there tenants before or what was the situation? Like, who?
Yeah, it was tenants before a couple of years ago, but then they moved out.
Did they leave it okay?
It's okay condition. Need a little fix-ups, but it's pretty okay.
Why haven't you just rented it back out?
Just busy, no time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What do you do for work?
I'm in sales. I work for AT&T.
Okay, nice.
Yeah,
I worked for AT&T for like a year.
Really?
I did.
What'd you do?
I worked at, have you ever heard of a call center called TELUS?
No. Matter of fact, I think I did. Yeah, I have. You work for them?
Yep, I worked at TELUS for a little over a year. I was, I worked for the AT&T account, and then I worked for the Google Fi phone. Remember when Google came out with that phone?
Oh, damn, that's crazy.
Yeah, cool. Do you like it there?
It's all right. I mean, you know, I want to get something better, but, you know, it pays the bills.
I mean, you will. You definitely will. I mean, you're busy. You can't fix it up. You said it was in the family. What about the rest of your family? Like, who else owns it?
Nobody wants it. I'm my only child, too.
Oh, you're an only child.
Yeah.
Okay.
Parents passed away and all that.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Was this their home?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So it was left to you. You made it a rental.
They left, and I just didn't care to get anybody, look for anybody to get back in it.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm really sorry to hear that.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Well, I definitely want to help you out. I mean, we can definitely get some money in your pocket, but besides the money, I mean, is there any reason why you would or wouldn't sell right now?
I mean, there's pretty much no reason why I wouldn't. I mean, I work this job. I definitely not going to turn down some money. You know, that'll always help.
How much are you looking to get for it?
Let's say like $150,000.
Okay. That's me looking.
That's you looking at running the numbers,
That's me running the numbers. Okay. Let's say I see that, you know, people are really, let's say cash buyers are really, this is a common scenario. People are really buying for 90.
Okay.
And they want 150 because they've seen something.
Right.
You know. So, Xavier, let me ask you this. Where'd you get the 150 from?
I kind of, somebody I know down the street, they sold one of their properties a while back. It was around that range, so I just.
Was that 1358 Lily Avenue?
Yeah. Yep.
I see that. Yep. $152,000.
Yep.
That house, I mean, that house looks brand new.
Oh,
yeah, that's got like marble floors.
Oh, yeah, we definitely don't have marble floors. So,
yeah. I mean, I know sometimes you could see things online and it can be a little misleading. So I guess, you know, my real question is like, what would you need to make on this? Because obviously we got to, you know, put a lot of work into this house to get it to that shape to be worth $150,000.
I mean, to be honest, I don't have a set number. It's like, I just want to, like I said, I got bills and stuff. So I just said 150 because that was the house I seen in the area. But if I could, there's no set number I need to make. I think we could make it work, whatever makes the most sense.
Okay. Well, I'm just, you know, I'm an honest person. I'm not going to be the person that says, oh, I could do 150 and then
right.
I go look at the house and tell you, oh, I can only do 50. Like I would leave a bad taste in your mouth, and I don't want to do that. I'm looking at the numbers right now, and I see most houses in that, you know, similar condition that just need some work. They're kind of going between $55,000 and $75,000.
Okay, I think 75 for me right now, the position I'm in, I think 75 would be pretty good if you could pull that off some way.
Okay, so I'm what I can do is I can move forward at 75. Of course, that's going to be contingent on us going, looking at it in person,
right,
checking it out, making sure there's nothing crazy, major roof, foundation issues. But is there anybody else that would need to say okay to this?
No, it's just me.
It's just you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's your email?
My email is xaviermiller123@gmail.com.
Okay, give me a second. I'm going to send you a super simple, just one-page agreement. We're going to, you know, move forward at the 75. I just need 14 days to just get some contractors in there. Make sure that all of that's good. But if everything looks good to what you're saying, we can move forward at that number.
Oh, cool. I appreciate that. Like I said, I'm at this job. I need some money right now, so I think that would work. I'm looking to get rid of this house anyway.
Okay. Can you check your email right now?
Yep, I'm checking it right now.
Okay.
Got it.
You got it?
Yep.
Okay, go ahead and look over it. I'm right here on the phone. Let me know if there's anything you have questions
on. Boom, 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 boom. Okay, I don't have any questions right now. If I do, I'll definitely give you a call, Toddy.
Okay, you can just click that. You can just click. It says click to sign.
Okay, got it.
Clicked all right, it. I got it, and I got it signed on my end. So what I'll do is, can we get in the house this week?
We get in ASAP.
Okay, so let's do about tomorrow between 11 to 2, but I'll text you an exact time.
Okay, that's perfect.
Perfect. It was really good talking to you, and really I hope to do this transaction with
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it, Toddy. Boom. Now you see that? Yeah. Where else are y'all gonna get that other than made up mindsets?
That's really it.
No, but on some real stuff, like for the people that's listening and watching and hearing that conversation, because a lot of people, you know, when it comes to wholesaling, they like, what do I say when I get on this phone? When this person says this, what do I say back? And then you know, some people got the scripts, but like the scripts is like you're reading it.
You can't read it
when
you gotta know the script, and that's just the bones of what you're talking about.
Exactly.
What you talk about is all about what the person is talking about. You have to build some kind of rapport. Like you said, you work at this call center. Yeah. Now I got to find, if you said, oh, I got to go on this run. Oh, you run too? Like, you know, you have to have something in common with the person.
Mm. And I could tell just by how you was kicking it back. I'm like, oh, you do this for real. Like, you like, she was looking out to the side. I'm like, yo, she really
doing
it.
I was like, I can't look at you. This is weird.
You was really like, that's some real value though, because that's something that people can, I'm pretty sure people going to have that screen record that conversation. Play it back like, okay, I need to be like this, say this.
If I heard your baby crying in the back, I'd be like, you got a baby? Oh, how old's the baby? What's her name? You know what I mean? Like, get to know the person. It's like when you go on a first date. You can't just be in a rush, you know, for the clothes. You got to get to know. And this was a little quick one, but if it took 30 minutes, it takes 30 minutes.
Mm. Damn.
Take your time. Let the person talk. Sometimes people just need an ear.
And to vent.
Yeah.
Some people want to vent and all this. You might be called at a time when somebody just want to go on a rant.
I spent 14 hours on the phone with this lady.
What?
I calculated because after the first call, I was like, that was too long. We talked for like over an hour. And every time she called me, she vented. At the end of it, I knew all her family's name, what they did to her, like her whole story.
14 hours.
14 hours in total over the course of like 3 months.
How big was the deal?
The deal ended up being like a $16,000 deal, but I only made like 11 because I had a boots on the ground, like the people I pay that are actually in the city. Depending on what they do, I'll pay them more or less. And he introduced me to some buyers that ended up buying it. So I gave him a cut of the deal. So I made $11,000, but to me, it was still worth it. Like, I helped her.
That's not bad. That's almost $1,000 an hour being on the phone with somebody.
Yep. And he ran into her the other day, and she had her surgery, because that was what she was going through. She had her surgery, and she asked about me and everything. And she was like, how's she doing?
I bet.
She was
so sweet. 14 hours. Y'all best of friends after that.
Yeah, we were.
That's a long time. And this one of the final questions I got for you before you wrap up. Whether it comes to business or whatever, however you want to answer it, what is your biggest regret?
Listening to people.
As far as what?
Listening to people and not going with my gut. Like, when you, especially when you start making money, guess what?
Right, everybody
when
you start making money,
everybody got an advice for you or an opportunity for you.
Oh my God. Don't get me started on that. Hey, everybody that's watching and listening, especially if you're making money. Please, like Toddy just said, there's going to be millions of people that come to you like, oh, I got this investment for you. I got this business opportunity. I got this. Like, okay, so how can I say it? Just don't do that shit. Especially if you just started making money, your pockets just started, you just starting able to stack. Don't do it, because there's a high probability that it's going to be some BS. That's just being real.
100%.
Like, so many, like, if the business is what it's supposed to be, why do they need your money? You know what I'm saying? So, when you just started making money, I know it's like, okay, I can grow my money, I can invest. You need to be real tight, like keep it tight, because everybody's going to come out of every way with an opportunity, especially when they know you got it. So the best way to just avoid all of that is just no. The answer is no, I'm not doing it.
In my opinion, investing is what you do with money that you didn't have to work for.
Exactly.
If I had to put hours to make that $12,000, why would I invest that? That money needs to go back into what just made me that $12,000 to make me more. If I make the money, that money's got to make me more money now. When that second money, there's a book called The Richest Man in Babylon. If you haven't read it, you have to read it. But it talks about your money having children. And it says you never spend your money's children. Your money's children have to have children. And you spend the grandchildren of your money. Mm. So investing is what you do with not just residual income, but money that you made from your money making you money, not you. If I have to work for it, and Grant Cardone says this all the time, and you know, people could feel how they want about him, but I think this is like the smartest piece of advice. You never spend money that's not cash flow. Like, if it's coming to you from your business because you have employees, invest that. But if you're still working, keep working. Money, yeah. You know, if after I made like my first 100K in wholesaling, everybody had, you should do this, you should do that. There's all these people with these funds. They want you to invest in these funds. Like, if I don't just have millions of dollars sitting around and I need to put money somewhere, I'm not going to put that money anywhere but back into me, back into my business, back into the things I want to do. Because I can bet on me every time and 10X that.
Yep.
But I don't really know what you're doing. So if you are going to, like, do your extreme homework and due diligence on anything, any opportunity people have or any like advice people give you, because they might not mean it in a malicious way. They might mean well.
Facts.
But what worked for them may not work for you. So just, if you're making money, keep making money.
Keep making money. And, and something that's important to also remember is that just how your job is to make money, there's people out here whose job and they spend hours and hours just to take the money you made.
And my dad says that all the time. It's so funny. I never heard anybody else say
it's real. And I'm not even talking about on those street kind of stuff. I'm talking about legally. Mm-hmm. It's people out here that have businesses and they move like they might be in suits and ties, dressed to the nines, and their business, their job is to take the money that you make. Mm-hmm. So as a person that's making good money as an entrepreneur, even as a person that's a corporate 9-to-5, whatever, you have to be a stickler about your finances, because when people know you got it, they will come for you and come with all these kind of opportunities and be like, I just need $45,000 from you. We can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you got it, you like, all right, cool, let's do it. Next thing you know, something going bad. Now you pissed off.
Let's go half on a house.
Let's go. I'm telling you, first, it's going to be all kinds of opportunity. And that's also why it's best to, when you make money, just shut the hell up.
Yes.
Because if people don't know, they won't come to you and they won't ask. Nobody will be asking for $1,000, $500. Nobody will say nothing because they don't know you got it. So, and I know that's hard to do. I got this thing that I say it's three stages that people go through when they make money. The first stage is they want everybody to know. It's like, I want everybody to know I got money. I want everybody to know I'm doing well. The second stage is you really don't care if people know. You like, if people think you got money, you don't really care. If they think you broke, you don't care. It's like, whatever. But the final stage is you don't want anyone to know you got money. It's like, I'm getting money. I don't want nobody to know. I want everybody to think I'm broke. I ain't got nothing. Because that way, people not going to ask. So I tell people, like, you may not go through all three, but generally speaking, you either going, people going to experience one of those stages. And I tell people, it's probably best to try to go at least to stage, straight to stage two. Just skip that stage one. But the goal I think everyone should be aiming for is definitely stage three, because there's less problems when you in that position.
It's hard in a day where social equity is almost as important as actual equity. You know, you don't, if you don't have a face card, if you're not nobody online, everyone is going to overlook you and treat you bad. So there's a certain amount of credit and doors that get open just for you being who you are.
That's facts.
If you have social equity. So I think it's definitely a balance.
It is.
You got to do, you know, be confident and show that you are who you are and be a person of integrity and be genuine. But you don't have to be flashy and throwing around how much money you make in conversation casually just to sound good. Like,
sound good.
No, just keep. Nobody should know what you make besides you and God and the IRS.
And the IRS.
That's it. And I mean, some people don't even tell them. So.
No, that's fact. Social equity. I'm going to wrap it up with this. Social equity in these days. It's funny because I was just talking to my brothers. I was telling them, like, man, I don't understand why, like, certain people that's extremely wealthy, like, want to get, like, lit on the internet. Like, they want to be, like, known. I'm like, you won. Like, you got all this money. I wouldn't care about being known by nobody. And my brothers, they, like, they ain't popping. I'm like, what you mean they ain't popping? They was like, if you ain't popping on the internet, you ain't really popping. It don't really matter.
Like, who even are you?
Like, I'm
that's,
like.
That's how people feel.
That's crazy to me. I know if I got a Billy right now, I don't think anybody will ever see me again. Like, but you know what I'm saying? Like, not to say I'm going to stop the podcast completely, but I know gradually I'm going to just go to, like, I'm just completely in the background. I'll probably delete my socials, and I'm just going to be living my life.
But if you have a billion and you're lit on social, you can turn that into 10 billion.
That's a fact.
Because people
are going
to buy into what you're doing. You know what I mean? So being good on social can only boost what you're doing, but what you're doing has to be good.
It has to be good, though.
And it has to be genuine.
It's no better way to wrap up than that. First, I want to say, Tidy, you've been an amazing guest. I appreciate you taking the time to come out here and do your thing. Like, you killed it. I know the viewers and listeners, they're going to love it. But before you wrap up, I want you to plug all your stuff where people can find you, follow you, become a student of yours. Everything you got going on, plug it.
Yes, definitely. So you can follow me on all platforms at Tadi Virtual, T-A-D-I Virtual, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, whatever, YouTube. And I do have a mentorship. You have to apply. It's very selective because I want to make sure that you heard my story and what it takes to do it, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just come in there and expect it to happen. You have to be willing to put a lot of work in. So what I'm doing right now is I'm doing a challenge. I'm doing a 5-day challenge, and it's going to be at richandremote.com. So rich, the letter N, remote. So if you go to richandremote.com, you'll be able to see all the details. But I'm literally taking everybody and day by day in 5 days, breaking down everything, getting them to take action, and actually showing them the inside of the virtual wholesaling business. That way, you're getting it right up front versus you start doing something and it doesn't happen in a day or two or three because you're not putting the work in and you start wondering, like, is this real? No. Like, you're getting everything in 5 days, and this challenge is going to be what catapults people into taking action right away.
That's fine.
You know, everybody buys a course and then they just sit on it.
Yep.
That's dead. Like, you can't be doing that. So this challenge is going to be huge. So I'm really excited about that. I think this is a way that I'll finally be able to push people in mass to just take action right away. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm doing. And that's what I'm focusing on right now is changing a lot of people's lives with that 5-day challenge. Mm.
Y'all heard it. Tap into that because that's going to be crazy. And if you want to become a virtual wholesaler, I'm going to make sure I put that link in the description show notes so people can just hit that link and get straight to it.
Perfect.
But like I said, I definitely appreciate you coming on again. This has been an amazing episode. And wrapping up, y'all can find me on every platform at the Millionaire Mindset Pod. And my personal account is at the official Xavier Miller. And that's all I got for y'all on this episode of the Millionaire Mindset Podcast. See you guys next episode. Peace.